We're back in session. We have all five board members present at this time, and so where were we when we went on this recess?
Thank you. Are we back on?
Yes, sir.
Charles Vogel, attorney for David Borowski. I forgot to tell you just a couple of things. I know that you all have the DOC packets in this case. One of the things that I ask you to look at is his work record. He has worked consistently throughout his incarceration from the day he got in until today. And that speaks well of his incarceration. The other thing I would like for you to know is that he is at his lowest custody and institutional risk right now, and has been so since 2004. The other thing that I neglected to tell you is very important, and that is about Mr. Zarowski's substance abuse history. You can ask him about his history while he's in DOC, but the truth is, at the time of this offense, although I can't say that he was actively using crystal methamphetamine at the exact time of the offense, he was using crystal methamphetamine actively at that time in his life, and he was using a lot. And as we all know, that was the scourge, and probably is today, one of the worst drugs that we have to deal with in the criminal justice system. And I have nothing further. Ms. Sen. Juliana.
Good morning. My name is Juliana Santafera, and I'm with the Arizona Justice Project's reentry team. And I had met David personally twice at Florence. And one of the things that stood out to me regarding David was when talking to him, he stated that he actually made a conscious decision to allow the Department of Corrections to work for him, and you can see that within his dedication to programming, working, and maturing into an adult who does give back to his community within the system. If he were to be granted release, he does have a support system here on the outside with us at the Reentry Project, but also with his mother and his stepfather, who are willing, able, and ready to allow him to move into their home in Mesa at 2121 North Mesa, which is in the packet you can see, is a gated community for seniors. And only a percentage of the residents have to be seniors. So although he's not a senior citizen himself, he will still be able to live there. With that being said, within the Mesa community, there are health clinics that we are prepared at the Justice Project to set him up with medical along with mental health services and get him set up with access for insurance. Both David and his family are open to counseling services and actually look forward to doing that so he can not only continue working on his addiction care, as well as other, you know, transitioning into the public environment as opposed to the incarcerated community. With that being said, not only are his family supports, his immediate family being his mother and stepfather, but also his uncle Mark, who is in recovery himself and has been for 18 years, is someone who speaks at AA and NA meetings and as a support, not only as a personal support, but a support for employment. His uncle is willing to work with him to find employment and works with other people who've been released from prison, finding employment. He knows a lot of the rules and regulations and stipulations that go along with being on house arrest or general parole, and can help David find people to connect with, either in masonry, information technology, along, you know, different things David already has skills in. As far as education, David said you know, he would like to find work in masonry, and the Mason Community College has classes to help him further his education in that field and his certifications. When we talk about specifically where he's living in the community, the local transportation is available to him, as well as his parents are willing to drive him to different appointments, jobs, whatever the case may be, depending on what his restrictions are. And we have a plan for financial and budgeting, whether he gets a job or he has to rely on an account that he's already started saving to work towards his housing. Do you have any questions beyond what he's presented in the packet? Thank you.
Well, we'll just point out, since we don't have any questions, that we are quite familiar with the work of the Justice Project and the work that the social workers are doing with that project. So that's probably one reason we don't have any questions.
Okay. And we've also made it clear to David and his family that whether he's, you know, granted release today or not, that doesn't mean we stop working. Like, if he is still remaining incarcerated, we continue our work.
Thank you.
My name is David Rodriguez. I am married to David's mother, so I am the stepfather. Just to piggyback on what this young lady said was, yes, we are ready. We have to have him come live with us. His mother is retired. I'm semi-retired. I work out of the house, so it's not like I have, if he needs transportation, anything, it's not like somebody has to run home from work or whatever like that. And I thought I overheard you said masonry work. I think David's interested in welding, and we have checked. His mother's built a site for tuition to go to. We've checked out some welding schools for him to. On all our visitations, he's a very, very driven to be a certified welder, and we would try to help him if he's fortunate enough to fit the role, is to help him do that. She did bring up my brother. My brother, who is MAA himself, and he's been like sober for 18 years. He does a lot of motivated speaker for the new members that do come into the AA. And he also he does sponsor quite a few people, and he has connections with other people who employ ex-inmates who. Well, other people, it's kind of hard to find people who want to employ ex-inmates, and they know the rules, they know the law, you know, what they can and cannot do as far as different projects are concerned, and he is giving us his support on this. So that's what I'd like to say, just backing up with this young lady here.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't have anything further other than to say I anticipate that you may ask David some questions about his disciplinary infractions that appear on the record, and I do have some documentation if you need that, if you have any questions about that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, so at this time, I'm going to turn it over to the representative from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and you can decide who and what order and everything you want to do.
Thank you, sir. We will have maybe the gentleman on the phone first, or let me have the gentleman on the phone.
Okay. Mr. Hanger?
Mr. Hanger?
Oh, sure, there you are. Would you like to address the board, sir?
I absolutely would love to address the board. Thank you for the opportunity. Start off with, my name is Carl Hanger. I'm a colonel, active duty colonel in the United States Marine Corps, 26 years. I'm the brother to the victim, Jason Lee. I did want to make sure I know who I'm talking to at the other end. My understanding, the board members are Ms. Rittenhouse, Mr. Quinones, Mr. Neal, and Mr. Johnson. I believe they're the fifth one that I'm not familiar with.
Dr. Wright.
Dr. Wright, thank you. Thank you for being on this board and listening to this. I sent a letter, and I believe that's been read, so I'm not going to try and repeat that information. But I will talk to you briefly about the impact of my mom, the impact of myself and my family, and then some thoughts on what I've heard so far. So, obviously, impact to my mother has been catastrophic, to say it the best I can. Losing her son, there's no mother should ever have to lose their son. From that event, leading on the rest of her life, she's been fractured her marriage. She's been through multiple bouts and constant attention with a therapist and other medications in order to try and lead a semi-normal life, which from what I'm watching from another son's perspective of his mom struggling to deal with the loss of her son, is just very difficult to watch. So the definite impact to the rest of her life, based on what inmate Zaworski decided to do. Impact to myself, I will say this. I have two kids, a 24 and a 22-year-old, that have never met my brother Jason. Myself, I carry tremendous guilt and a tremendous loss of losing my brother. We heard a lot about inmate Zaworski's, what he's done, all the things that he's doing to rehabilitate himself, etc. What you're not hearing is the same story on my brother's behalf. He also was a 16-year-old boy without really an identity and had his own issues going on in his life, and I won't paint him to be a saint, but he was denied the opportunity to outgrow this or to develop or mature or any of the other things that I've heard discussed about inmate Zaworski's abilities. So in that aspect, the impact to me has been just a tremendous sorrow, tremendous feelings of guilt, and just constant concern. The last thing I'll mention was that there was a resume to my mother back when all this happened, to her wife. So obviously there's some concern of the future of what might happen if he is actually let out of prison. The thing I'll touch on is just spent a lot of time from working in a mental health state, a mental health hospital, state hospital for several years to a career of watching, analyzing, teaching, mentoring young men into adulthood, etc. I can say I've sat on boards similar to what you're sitting on, not quite the same, but similar. Evaluating the future of an individual and what they shall or shall not do. The multiple times that I've seen boards decide that someone is rehabilitated for the majority of those times, that's not necessarily true. I will say, you know, I got that he's working and et cetera and those things, but the fact remains when he was out there in the desert, sometime before then, he made a conscious decision, developed a plan, implemented that plan by luring my brother out there to look at the marijuana plants, show the shotgun, had my brother carry the shovel and dig his own grave, and then shot him, from what I understand, in the face, and then continued to use that body in order to manipulate and intimidate his peers, all the while continuing to break into my mother's house, stealing things to make it look like my brother was still alive and promote confusion. That is a very precise, thought-out, planned, and executed event, not a reactionary type of event. I will say that that mentality and that level of coldness, as well as in the police report, that there was a lack of emotion, demonstrated by inmate Zaworski through the trial process, demonstrates to me that you have an individual that's probably, possibly never rehabilitatable. He understands and has learned the court system, the prison codes, as far as what it takes to be eligible for parole, because he knows it's going to happen by law at 25 years. So he's done those things in order to make himself as as likely as possible to be paroled. I do not believe that that is going to be the case if he is released. As I said in my letter, and I'll reiterate here, if he is released, I do believe that is a great threat to the community and as well as to my family. And I believe that this individual should not be paroled due to those things. I do have one question that I didn't quite hear, but I've heard disciplinary infractions, and I believe I heard that he's been 5 years sober. Is that true?
I believe the sober, I think, has been longer than 5 years, and there was a disciplinary infraction. Overall, the discipline inside has been not too bad.
Okay. I thought I heard someone say he's been sober for 5 years, but either way, I mean, inside incarceration, just the random infractions means that he's continued to break the law, depending on exactly what those are, because I don't know what they are. But just alluding to the fact that what I'm hearing so far, there's been continued regressions throughout that time period. I think you're going to see those continue on out into the real world. I will say the last thing I will mention is just that he has a life. He made a decision. He made a choice. He was imprisoned for life. He is not dead. My brother Jason Lee is dead. We don't get to talk to him. We don't get to touch him. We don't get to celebrate anything with him, regardless of whether he's behind bars or not. Behind bars is still living. I do not believe that he should be allowed to be released beyond those bars, but he should be allowed to continue to give back to society. He should be allowed to continue to work and do the great things that he's doing behind bars. And with that, I will close, and if there's any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, sir. Well, thank you for your service. Mr. Canales?
Thank you. Colonel, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
I just have a question for you. I recognize it's not an easy one, and Central 5, by the way. You made a very strong statement. I read your letter as well, but you had stated to the board that you sat on similar types of panels. So in your experience, have you seen individuals that you feel have the capacity for rehabilitation?
That's a great way to put that. The capability versus will they are two different concepts. Capability, yes. More often than not, when we thought there was capability, we were wrong, and their actions did not set out what we thought they were capable of. So I have, over the 26 years of doing stuff like that, I have probably got a little bit more callous about it, but there's definitely a... it's easy to believe someone's capable of being rehabilitated based on actions and based on words. It's very difficult to watch them and prove that they are going to continue with those actions and words once they get what they want. And I've found more often than not, the parole, or excuse me, one of those boards elects to retain a Marine or allow them to continue training or whatever the case may be, 9 times out of 10, they were wrong.
Thank you for the insights, Colonel. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No. Thank you, sir. You're welcome to stay on the phone and listen to the rest of the hearing.
I do have one question. My wife was wondering if she could say a couple words. Leslie Anger, my wife of 27 years.
Is she there?
She is.
I don't have any problems with that. Okay. Yeah, if she'd like to get on and say a few words.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to try not to be emotional. But I want to let you know that I was 35 weeks pregnant.
Ma'am, could you state your name?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, could you state your name?
Yes, my name is Leslie Hanger, and I sent a letter, but I never received confirmation that it was received. So I apologize for you being surprised by me being here. Thank you for the opportunity for doing this and allowing us to call in. I was 35 weeks pregnant with our oldest when Jason's remains were found, and we identified him through sexual records because the body was 50 concurrent. That is my story. When you keep seeing pictures of someone later on, a family picture, and you try to explain to them who this person is and why they were killed, because you really don't have a good reason. And that's something that I hope most people have never had to explain to their own children. Because it's very, as you can hear in my voice, 25 years later, the emotion is still raw. And to watch with my mother-in-law have panic attacks or anxiety attacks because of bad dreams or things that have affected her when my husband's been deployed, and try to handle all of that sometimes, has not always been something that I've done with grace, but it's something that I've always done because of the love and the support that we have for each other. And we were fortunate enough to be stationed in California many times. So by proximity, I was able to go and be with her occasionally throughout that time, and they would come to our house. So even though we're a military family, I have witnessed quite a bit of this over the years. And I want you to know that it's real, and the emotions that we feel are real. And I'm not saying that his are not, but I have to agree with my husband. I really feel very strongly and very afraid for my mother-in-law's life if he is really. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions from the board? Yes. Okay.
Victim's father would like to hear something.
My name is Dallas Lee. I'm his father, Jason. And very difficult. In losing my son, it's affected my whole family, my marriage, and my emotions. Not having my son anymore, I never got the opportunity to teach him to drive. Watch him graduate from high school, college, get married, have a family of his own. And this is what this man is asking for. With no son, I do not feel that this man should have that opportunity. My son is dead. To me, he is dead to me. And he deserves to stay exactly where he's at for the rest of his life. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, sir. Yes.
Members of the board. My name is Jay Rademacher. I'm a deputy county attorney from Maricopa County Attorney's Office and the Capital Litigation. I'm here to represent the state and the county attorney's office when they prosecuted this defendant. I want to remind this board that the murder of a child, because that's who our victim was, a child, robs this world of many things. The individual that you're making a decision on today robbed this world of millions of different things and opportunities. We've sat here and we've heard a lot about what this inmate has done in the last few years. But I want to talk about something else that really hasn't been addressed so far. I ask you to look at this individual as a wolf in sheep's clothing. he is. What he did in this case, how he lured the victim out to the desert, how he urinated on his grave, boasted about what he had done, used it as a tool to manipulate others for fear, and then continued to victimize the mother by burglarizing her home, making her believe her son was still alive. Throughout his record, and I'm speaking record, the court record, his psychological evaluation that was done from the transfer hearing from juvenile court to adult court, a psychological evaluation was done of this individual. You've heard all about the things he has done to curb his substance abuse. However, I quote essentially from his defense attorney's sentencing recommendation to the court. If David is given the opportunity for treatment of his psychological problems and the tools to combat his drug addiction, David can mature into a healthy and productive citizen. You have heard that he has maybe combated his drug and alcohol issues while being in DOC. It seems he struggled with it, or that's just a recent thing that he has accomplished with 5 years of sobriety. Why is that? Well, why everything that we keep hearing of all the great things he's done just in the last few years? Did this man enter DOC trying to rehabilitate himself and trying to do different things to help himself? No. I ask the timing of many of this. Is he that wolf in sheep's clothing? He is. He was diagnosed antisocial during his transfer hearing. We've heard nothing about what he has done as his defense attorney begged the court when to accept the plea and move forward with the sentence. He's done nothing to address his psychological issues. This man, when interviewed by police, the initial detective, his probation officer, told the court that this man will kill again, that this man is manipulative. Hence why I keep referring to the wolf in sheep's clothing. The individuals that dealt with him when he was facing the charges in this case all described him as manipulative. That is who you're seeing. He is essentially working to manipulate the system to get out, and he's not addressed who he truly is. Now, counsel for, I don't know if he represents him or for the justice, for the Arizona Justice League, talked about the inmate and that he didn't want to get into the juvenile brain. And he didn't want to talk about it and said, your board members are all familiar with that. And I know you are. But I don't want to sit here and debate whether or not the impact of the juvenile brain when it comes to something like this. But what I want to do is talk to you about the Miller v. Alabama case that the United States Supreme Court essentially brought us forward on that, and what factors the U.S. Supreme Court looks at in determining whether or not this is an individual with transient immaturity or if this is somebody irreparable corrupt. There are several factors that the U.S. Supreme Court says you are to look at when determining if someone is irreparably corrupted or if their crime was one of transient immaturity. Yes, he was young when he committed this crime. I'm not here to dispute that. But again, one of the factors is the failure to appreciate the risk. In his psychological evaluation and his transfer hearing to adult court, the defendant told the doctor that he knew what he did was wrong. He knows what he did in this case was wrong. So there wasn't a failure to appreciate the risk of his behavior. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he knew he shouldn't be doing it. Another factor is the home environment. Throughout the court record, you will see that there are several references that his mother was loving, caring, and he had really no issues with her, that she was always there for him. He says he didn't come forward to tell anyone about his homosexuality, but he's got a loving mother at home. His dad, he talks about maybe being abused or hit with a board. But it seems that when he talks about his dad was also loving and caring and there for him. His dad may have been strict, and he didn't like the rules that his dad was putting on him, but his dad was there for him. So he did have a home environment. It wasn't a horrific childhood or growing up. He made decisions to get into drugs and to do other things when he was a young man. Those were his choices. He had the environment at home and the support system if he chose to acknowledge them and take it. He did not. The other thing that the Supreme Court looks at when you're looking at an individual, and I remind them, the psychological problems that have not been addressed that this inmate does have and has been diagnosed with, is the offense. You are to look at the offense. I think we all know the facts of this case. It seems from all the board member questions that you are all very familiar with all the facts of this case. So I'd just like to point out, it was cold. It was calculated. It was planned. He relished on the offense as he urinated on the grave. He relished on the offense as he bragged to his sister. He relished on the offense as he bragged to his friends. Another factor when looking at an individual, if it is immature or irreparably corrupt, is whether or not there is peer pressure. There was no peer pressure. This wasn't an individual joyriding who got caught up in a drive-by shooting and someone in the car shot and killed someone by accident. He was just there and he's pressured along to go with it. No, that is not the case here. This is a cold and calculated individual who took someone out to the desert and executed him. Inability to deal with the police, court, officers, prosecutors. This individual showed no signs of that. The possibility of rehabilitation is one of the other factors. He had major violations. He's had minor violations. Mr. Neal talked about earlier that there were some violations, not very bad, but he did have major violations. He did have minor violations. And it seems to all just cease right when he starts thinking about, hey, I might be able to get out. Hence, the wolf in sheep's clothing. What have we learned from this defendant? And what have we seen from him? We've seen that recently, in the last few years, he's been doing somewhat okay from what we've been told. But has he addressed the issues that underline who this man is and what this man did? His crime wasn't one of immaturity. This individual is irreparably corrupt. Letting him out, as his probation officer told the court at his sentencing, as the lead detective told the court at sentencing, he will kill again, for he is a danger to the community. The last thing I want to talk about, and I don't necessarily look at it as necessarily an excuse for the crime, and I'm not trying to argue that the defendant is claiming it to be, or excuse me, the inmate is claiming it to be. But this claim that he was sexually assaulted or sodomized, he had a support system he could go to. He did not. He didn't want anyone to know about it. But as soon as he got popped or picked up by the police, there was his defense. That was his reason. I'm not here, and I don't ever want to attack a victim of sexual assault. I never want to do. But it's you to decide whether or not anything like that is true. Or was this truly an antisocial individual with psychological problems? His MMPI results show he has a tendency to fake results and to exaggerate in his juvenile transfer hearing. He never told anyone of that assault until he could use it. It was like an ace in the hole he was carrying around. Did it really happen? He used it as a tool as manipulation as it seems from the record. When you look at what he did in this case, and you look at the investigation, because yes, the police did investigate his claims. The police did look into it, and they found nothing. No corroboration, no evidence of it. And I'm sure this board has probably seen before. The claim of sexual abuse by a defendant is a song that is sung many, many of times. And I'd like to tell this board that just because you are sexually assaulted doesn't predispose you to committing crimes. It's actually the opposite, despite contrary belief. This individual may have recently, in his 25 or 20 some odd years, Department of Correction, addressed some of his substance abuse issues and is passing his time away working. But he hasn't addressed who he truly is. The man who lured a child out to the desert, executed, and continued his ploy of manipulation to try to get away with it. And when he got caught, he used an excuse. The board has any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Yes, sir.
Yes, there's a statement in the North of the County Attorney's report that I'm sure it comes from the pre-sentence investigation, so I don't mean to put you on the spot, but it said both the lead detective and defendant's probation officer told the court at the sentencing that if he ever released the kill again, was there any information in your research that he showed this willingness to kill again if given the opportunity?
He used what he did in the murder of this case to threaten others. I believe it is. It's either his sister or his friends that if you snitch on me or anything like this, this is where you're going to end up. I believe in my review of the reports and the records that many of those statements were because of his attitude towards what he did. The lack of remorse, the I don't care about anything except myself in this situation. And I believe that's where their fear comes from. And that is consistent with the psychological problems that were diagnosed on this inmate at that time when he was in front of the court system.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Zawarski, Mr. Zawarski. We're nearing the end of your hearing, and at this time we would like to offer you a final statement. Now, your attorney and representative can give the final statement, you can give the final statement, or it can be a combination of both, however you would like to do it.
Thank you, sir. I would like a combination of both. My attorney is speaking for me. But I would also like to address the board.
Okay.
It's hard to hear that I've affected so many lives so harshly. I know with the ICB and working with the ICBC that this is this continued feeling. It never goes away with the mothers of and loved ones of murder victims. It's hard to know that my actions were directly responsible for people continuing to feel this way. It's one of the hardest things that I had to deal with in my life. I have a lot of pain in my heart because of that. I think for a long time, I didn't quite know how to feel about it. And that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you. I just would like to... The pain that the victims have, I have no idea what they, how much they have suffered, I can imagine. David has expressed to me on several occasions on my visit his tremendous remorse, and I want to convey that to the board. I also ask you to consider this. It was a terrible crime, but at some point there is hope for redemption for people, and there's hope for mercy. And 25 years is no drop in the bucket. 25 years of incarceration from the time you're 15 is a huge chunk of David Zawarski's life. He is doing the best he can, and I, although he hasn't said it, irrespective of your decision today, he will continue to be a positive influence in whatever environment he finds himself in. He will continue to affirmatively seek out positive relationships rather than negative relationships. He has done that over this period of time, and it has not been a, it has been a difficult road for him in prison. So I ask you to consider really the basics of what we're talking about, and that is punishment and rehabilitation. He has demonstrated maturity and rehabilitation, and I ask you to seriously consider releasing him to the community in whatever capacity you think is appropriate.
Could I ask you one thing? I forgot when we were doing it. Has he had a recent psychological evaluation?
He has not. And he has not. And, you know, he did have a psychological evaluation 25 years ago, and whether that still pertains to the person, I'm suspect, quite frankly, that a 25-year-old psych evaluation is valid, but thank you.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask, is there anyone else that would like to speak for Mr. Zawarski? No? Is there anyone else that would like to speak on behalf of the victims? Would you like to speak?
Yes.
Okay.
I am Johnny Lee Warren. I hope I can do this. David contradicted much of his trial. I did not bring the paperwork. I wanted you to know that Dallas Lee, Jason was his only biological child, to my knowledge. That's his only child. He raised my other children. And he was a great dad to all of them. And I have many grandchildren and a great-granddaughter who will never know the humor of my son, the goodness that he did have in him. And the many times I asked David's mother to please not let her kids come to my house. And he wasn't that small, and I never heard anybody bully him. They were in my home before this happened. I knew them. I called you numerous times to keep them away from Jason. They weren't a good mix. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, well, just...
I'd like to say something. You caught him...
Ma'am.
This is the bathroom and you tried to hurt her.
Please, leave him. Everybody sit down. Everybody just sit down, please. We're not...
Ma'am,
we're going to have to ask you to leave. If you don't be quiet, we're going to have to ask you to leave. Please be quiet.
You...
We know that there are emotions, but please be
quiet. Please keep our emotions to ourselves. Otherwise, then we're going to have to ask you to leave.
I'll be happy to leave.
Okay, well, thank you, ma'am.
Excuse me.
Once again, Mr. Lee, may I just say this? We're going to ask everyone to keep their emotions to themselves. When we go through these, we know that there are emotions. We know that, and we understand that. But we cannot condone them being out of line. Otherwise, we ask that persons just leave the room and keep their emotions to themselves. And we do recognize the fact that we don't hold out against anyone, but we must ask that we show respect for the board, state of Arizona, and for ourselves. Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. And I apologize for the outburst. We never know when something like that might happen. It's unfortunate. Okay, so Mr. Zawarski, the board is going to go into discussion to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves, but we won't be addressing you, so we ask that you remain silent, but stay on the phone. You can hear the entire conversation, and once we've made a decision, I'll get back with you. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. What is now in discussion? Well, this case is unfortunate, and you know, I always hate to use the word interesting because it makes it sound kind of bad, but there's a lot of issues as well with this one, and we've got to sort through. Going back to, you know, the crime and the circumstances and all the witnesses and everything else, I think that, you know, that it wasn't the spur of the moment thing, it wasn't a crime of passion, all of a sudden because of something that happened, it was thought out. And one of my concerns is there's always being brought up about the developing mind of a juvenile, and it's starting to play into a position where people are trying to use it as an excuse, and it isn't an excuse. It may contribute to some bad thinking, but I myself am very concerned about the fact that as a, you know, 15, 16 year old who became incarcerated, he grew up inside the prison system. He does not know what it's all about to grow up as a kid in this country. And my theory is that the maturity that he's reached, because everybody matures with age, but that the maturity he's reached isn't a good maturity because it lacks a lot of the foundation that most people have, and it makes children to responsible adults. And without having a current psychological evaluation to compare against the evaluation at the time of his transfer here, at this time I'm not in favor of any type of release or absolute discharge, but I'm going to listen to discussion from my fellow board members. Mr. Canales.
Yes. Well, thank you, Mr. Neal. I just want to add to that that I'm concerned about the cold, calculating, and premeditated nature of the moral question. I recognize we're not here to retry the case, but in considering whether or not I consider an individual safe to return to the community, I still consider it a red flag. I don't think it was ever brought up during the hearing today, but by how undisturbed Mr. Zawarski was by such a horrific killing. I think about individuals who utilize justified deadly force, and it often results in PTSD, even when confronting a terrible threat on behalf of themselves and those around them. And I would think that he would be, or would have been at that time, very disturbed by the act, and it seems that in the looking at the whole of the case, there was just a cold quality to repeat from the prosecutor, and I find it disturbing, and I'm not finding him a suitable candidate for supervised release. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I just, this may have been mentioned already, and we certainly have Mr. Reimacher's testimony, but we also have the letter dated February
6, 2019. Signed by Mr. Reimacher.
So, yeah. That, you know, again states the position of the Maricopa County attorney that the state opposes any sort of early release. So I agree with
Mr. Johnson?
I agree. I'd say that I agree with Mr. Quinones. It was a cold, calculated, premeditated murder. Everything that I've had the opportunity to read in the pile states that he planned the murder from the summer of 1993. And he waited until January of 1994 when Mr. Lee was released from the juvenile detention facility, and he got with him the very next day and took him out to the desert and killed him and murdered him. It wasn't until he was interviewed by the sheriff's office that he told anybody, or the story came up about him being raped. At that time, and the only information that I saw in the pre-sentence report was that he said he was raped by Mr. Lee along with another gentleman who he could only describe as Frank. And there may have been more information in the trial, but that's all I could see in the pre-sentence report. And it tells me that for several months he planned this murder and he kept it to himself. And he calculated and waited for him to get out when he committed the actual murder. I just think that someone who would do that, and then after he committed the murder, he took his sister there to the site, told his girlfriend about it. He told at least one of his friends about he had committed the murder. He told his sister, and he told the investigating officers that he wasn't sorry, he was glad he did it. That he had actually killed him. I think that based on that information that he waited over those months and times, it just tells me that he could keep it to himself, that he could plan it in his mind, keep it to himself, and then go out and actually conduct the actual crime itself. I would think that someone of that nature, that caliber, would still be a threat to the safety of the community. And I just do not see releasing him out to the public at this time. And also in the letter from the county attorney's office, it states that I think it was the detective and the probation officer said if he's released, he's going to kill again. And I just can't. With all of that information, I just cannot see safely releasing Mr. Zorowski back out into the community.
Thanks, sir. I might say, too, on that line is that the psychological evaluation from 25 years ago was not real good. Not real favorable, and as was already stated, don't know if the current one would do it, and that's my whole issue, is that I'm not comfortable with this current psychological condition. Dr. Wright.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. It behooves this board, and it's this board's responsibility, is to take into consideration all the information that's being presented to the board, and we have, I believe that this board has done that. I think that, and Yes, I would be one who would agree that Orozco is not the same when he was 16 years of age, when he was 40 years of age. But do we really see a real change in him? We have to protect, look out for the welfare of the citizens of Arizona, among other things. And I think that this is something that we always have to do. We also have to be very fair and professional in carrying out our responsibilities. And I feel that this board is being fair and is being professional in carrying out its responsibility. I think that one of the things that we always look at in trying to make a determination, and I always look at in trying to make a determination, and I know this has been discussed already, and that is a discipline. I think that when we look at discipline, and I know that many of them go back a long ways, but there, over the years, there have been 11 majors, 9 minors over the years. You know, and I just cannot overlook them. And some of them, you know, some of them, I know that they go back over a period of years, but fighting, manufacturing weapons, things of that nature, I cannot overlook theft and possession of goods. And it's things of that nature that I think that, and even as we move closer to now, 2016, which is not that long ago, a major, a motor prison contraband, 11 years ago, possession and manufacturing of drugs. I know one might say, well, that's not recent, and it's not recent, but it does point out the fact that he has not lived a clean life. And the one in 16, the most recent one, I think by then he should have been conscious of the fact that he would be coming before this board at some point. And yet in 2016, there was a major that's on his record. As one board member, I feel that as one board member, I'm not in favor of General Barrow after the discharge of home arrest.
Thank you, sir. So, based on all the information we gathered today, the testimony, information in our board packet, I am going to move to deny Ready for home arrest after discharge to David Zawarski, ADC number 112327, and ask for 1 year set off to the date and time. And that would be the motion.
Second.
Agree. Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Canonis, agreed by Dr. Wright, Mr. Johnson, and Ms. Rittenhouse. And the reasons would be that it's a serious and violent offense, and I would loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, age of the victim, and my mind, going somebody out to the desert is a type of victim harassment, violated previous probation parole. I'm going to say prior criminal history. We've had a lot of run-ins with the authorities. Recent disciplinary infractions. Unless there's something somebody else would like to add to that.
I just want to add to the record that on victim harassment, that included the burglaries.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Just for the record, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Zawarski. You heard our decision?
Yes, I did, sir.
And you heard the reasons that we listed?
I did.
Okay. So I would like to commend you for all your work with your programming and your dedication to your welding skills so you have the opportunity of employment someday. That's very, very good. If you need to stay sober, and that includes not promoting the contraband, because inmates will get in trouble with drugs even though they're not using them sometimes, and we realize how prevalent they are in there. But we do wish you the best of luck. You'll be certified by Department of Corrections in approximately 12 months for another hearing. Continue moving forward, and this will end your hearing, sir.
All right, thank you very much.